You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We have a great book to dig into. I'm so excited. A new book from Concordia Publishing House, but a returning author here on KFUO. Craig Parton, he's trial attorney, author, and United States Director of the International Academy of Apologetics and Human Rights. He's also chairman of the litigation department at his firm, which I believe is the oldest, I'll get the correct information, oldest west of the Mississippi. So joining us by phone now, Craig Parton, author of Religion on Trial. Craig, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Happy to be with you.
Okay, I messed up the history of the firm.
It's not important.
But it's important if you're, you know, it's an important trivia question. Like maybe if we ask a trivia question later on. So the oldest firm, is it west?
West of the Mississippi.
West of the Mississippi.
Wow.
I did remember it. Okay, I did mess it up horribly.
Congratulations, Andy. Gold stars.
Our founders came down from the Gold Rush San Francisco in 1859 and established a law firm in Santa Barbara, and it's been a continuous partnership from them until today. So that's kind of the background.
And I should have known that because I knew you were in Santa Barbara, so I should have known west of the Mississippi.
Oh, that's true. That's in the book, too.
You don't usually associate that kind of pedigree with Santa Barbara with the kind of culture here, you know, so...
Your new book, Religion on Trial, available from CPH. I have enjoyed the book so far. I have a little bit more to read, but I've enjoyed it so far. This is the second edition, so you've released this book before, but provided some updates, and we can talk about those updates in this edition in just a minute. But Religion on Trial, let's dig into it. What rules or methods do you apply to an examination of religious truth claims?
Well, first, let me just say who the audience is that I wrote the book for, and then I can answer your question maybe a little more directly. I wrote the book for non-Christians, primarily. A book that you can hand to a skeptic or a non-believer that doesn't assume the truth of Christianity as a starting point, but seeks to prove what can be proven concerning religious truth claims, and are there any religious truth claims that actually stand up to verification or not. And so I designed this to hand to a coworker, to maybe your son or daughter who went to secular university and checked out a Christianity after their freshman philosophy class, or a host of other people in our culture who view Christianity as something that goes for people that want to be spiritual, or who got the faith gene. They just happen to be naturally religious and can have faith, and the secularist figures, they don't have faith, so Christianity is something for someone else, and they're more scientifically oriented, et cetera. So I approached this question about what we're going to investigate in terms of religious truth claims from the perspective of evidence and the methods of evidential proof that are established and used widely in courts of law, but are also used naturally by everybody to cross the street. The inductive process, the empirical method, probability evidence is what we use every day. You get on an airplane, you use probability evidence, you use the inductive method subtly to determine you're getting on the right plane, and you actually exercise faith to a certain extent to believe that the pilot of the plane is qualified, etc., to operate the airplane, and it isn't a six-year-old up there. So these rules and methods are really what we apply every day to determine whether anything is true and should be relied upon in our everyday experience. So I first look at the issue in the book of, are all religions saying the same thing? Basically, there's a perception that they're all just variations on a theme. And the gist of this beginning of the book is to reach the conclusion that the world's religions are not speaking with a common voice. They do not support the claim that there are many paths up the same mountain. They are actually, the paths they recommend are diametrically opposed to one another on the most basic issues. And so you get to the point of saying, well, maybe all of them are false. And I address that in the book, whether that's a possibility, is certainly a logical possibility, that none of them are true, and you shouldn't waste your time with them. But we look for, ultimately, claims being made by religions that can be verified or checked out on an evidential basis, and we conclude very quickly that there are precious few religions that even care about making truth claims that can be verified. They instead offer a changed life. They offer peace and well-being. They offer a better family life. They offer a whole host of subjective improvements on your life. But they aren't linked to whether a fact occurred or not, save for one religious position, and we can talk about that later. But the inquiry is to apply the basic methods we apply every day, and they are applied, they're called the legal method or scientific method, empirical method, which we apply every day to cross the street successfully, to get on an airplane, as I mentioned, and apply those to religious truth claims and see which ones ask to be verified and which ones it's not even worth asking truth questions about because they really aren't even structured to present a truth claim. And so the book is that effort to look at this as a skeptic, as somebody who thinks perhaps that all religions are equally invalid and equally subjective leaps of experience, and see if there's any that stand up to evidential inquiry.
Now, you mentioned skepticism, and maybe this has been a cultural thing for a long time, but I feel like in these days with our being an informed consumer and Google at our fingertips, being skeptical about things is very common and maybe even praised. Is there a time when skepticism is a good thing?
Absolutely, and I would particularly emphasize it's a valuable commodity to have when investigating religious truth claims, because religion and religious truth claims, in many cases, tell you about what they think ultimate reality is involved, and what is ultimate reality, and where you go after death in this life, whether there is an afterlife or not. So the most serious questions of the meaning of this life and what happens after death are covered by religious positions. And I'll tell you, it's a very important thing to bring a healthy dose of skepticism to investigating religious truth claims, because if you don't and you simply try religious truth claims based on the experience they will give you, you will actually end up likely more jaded than ever in being able to discern what's true and what's not. There are illustrations of this that abound of people that have tried out, for example, Eastern mysticism, or tried out the truth claims involved in experimenting with psychedelic drugs, the experience that comes from joining cultic activity, whether it be Eastern cultic activity or other cults and sects that exist that have an authoritative structure that people entered into for the experience of communalism, et cetera, and ended up in a very, very dangerous place. So healthy skepticism is valuable and encouraged, and I think the book attempts to address people with healthy skepticism. What it is also cautioning people about, though, is to remain a skeptic even after the evidence is proven beyond a reasonable doubt that a religious position may be true. At that point, you have to make a decision. You have to decide whether this religious position is correct or not. And if the evidence is strong and the presentation, and you've checked it out yourself and you remain a skeptic because the evidence doesn't reach 100% certainty, then I think it's it's not serving you well. Skepticism is appropriate to ask the big questions of whether a religious truth claim has established itself beyond a reasonable doubt. But once a religious position has done that and stands the test of inquiry, then we have an obligation to follow it wherever it may lead, as long as the evidence is strong and persuasive in that. And you can't sit back and say, well, it's not 100% certain, for example, that Jesus died and rose again from the dead, therefore validating his claims to be God in the flesh. That is a factual claim that can never reach 100% certainty on the basis of evidence, but it is so strongly, probabilistically occurred in history that to not go with what that means and the impact of that is to be foolish. It's to ask of a factual claim what it'll never present, which is 100% certainty. But we make decisions, life and death decisions, all the time based on less than 100% certainty. I may be a skeptic about food, but if I remain a skeptic about food for more than several days, I will be dead. So you ultimately have to make a commitment one way or the other in terms of religious truth claims. Skepticism is welcome, but it shouldn't be a covering for investigating the evidence, seeing if the evidence rises to a strong probabilistic case, and if it does, then moving forward with the commitment to that religious position.
We have just about a minute left. Give us a brief list of the religions you consider in Religion on Trial.
Well, the standard world religions, Islam, of course, gets highlighted, Judaism, the Eastern mystical cults, Hinduism, Buddhism, Scientology, Mormonism, a lot of the isms and cults and sects that exist out there. We investigate those for what claims they make, and particularly whether they are in unison in terms of what they say about man, about history, about ethics, about life, death, salvation. And the book concludes that it's a cacophony of voices that are disparate and completely unable to be compatible with one another. And therefore, you need to investigate how to see if any of them are true. And it comes to the conclusion after a thorough investigation of the Christian truth claims for various reasons stated in the book that it is beyond a reasonable doubt been established that Jesus is indefinitely who he claimed to be, based on his resurrection from the dead, is a central legal fact that's proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
Our guest today, Craig Parton, he's trial attorney, author, and the United States Director of the International Academy of Apologetics and Human Rights, author of Religion on Trial, second edition from Concordia Publishing House. Craig, thanks so much for being our guest on the Coffee Hour today.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
You're listening to the Coffee Hour on KFUO. The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO, the listener-supported broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. To support the Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit kfuo.org or text KFUO to 41444. KFUO, Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.